This is Thrive Perspectives, an ever-growing discussion about the issues and ideas that shape our lives with your guide, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Good morning, Connell. Good morning, Matt.
Good to be here, lads.
Yes, it is. Good to be here.
Connell, we've got something juicy today.
We've got something juicy. Well, we had a cup of coffee. That was juicy. I needed that this morning. So thank you, Connell, for doing the usual coffee run for us. But welcome, listeners, Thrive Perspectives, as we continue our series on worldview, or the Christian worldview. And we're going to hopefully close out a little bit of a topic we've been discussing over the last few episodes, actually, in relation to particularly around technology. But we're now moving into the phase where we're looking at, and we've discussed the last couple of episodes, how technology impacted our lives, particularly our relationships, throughout the last decade, really, and it's accelerating at an incredible rate. We've talked about AI and a whole lot of other things that create greater convenience for us, easy access to information, and all of those things aren't bad in their own right. We've talked about that. We're certainly not having a crack at technology, but what we are saying is that at the same time as we see this incredible advancement in technology and the ease for us to do many sort of everyday tasks, it's also creating a separate issue for the world, which is being recognized by psychologists and experts around the world, where people are feeling more and more isolated. We've talked about the difficulty for people to create meaningful and deep relationships. We've discussed that people are actually reverting to chatting to bots because, you know, it's just easier to do that than it is to talk to a real person. And so we've come to the point which we touched on in the last episode, where we talked about how the church can be and needs to be and should be really a point of difference to that. And one of the things we want to sort of talk a bit about today is where we see this current trajectory that technology is enabling. It's not technology's fault, but it's enabling us to move much more quickly in the direction of, you know, essentially being isolationists, I guess, and independent of anyone else. How as the church, we can actually be a bit of a remedy to the issues that that's creating for people in the world and this greatly increased isolation that people are feeling.
And it is important too that when we're talking about technology, we're not saying that technology is causing this in itself. I think the problems that technology is bringing out in society have always been in us. It's just that technology allows us to dig deeper into that and become trapped by all of those things and direct. It allows us to, it amplifies a lot of the problems in us as humans, that weakness that's in there to pursue a whole lot of things that are taking us in a different direction to the way that God designed us to live in the first place. So, and I think that's important because we talk about technology did this or does that and so on, but I see it as an accelerator. It's totally. Like we're throwing petrol on the fire in a way of problems that are already within us.
Yeah, that's right. Well, to position this within the biblical worldview, essentially what we see is that after the fall, which was a grasp for the wrong kind of power, essentially, you know, the fall essentially was wanting to be like God. So sort of wanting that autonomous independence and autonomy was sort of behind the fall, and then a grasping for a kind of independent power. So in a sense, the more powerful, and this is what we see through history, is that the more powerful a human being becomes, the more that power in our sort of natural kind of corrupted state, it tends to feed the wrong things and disable the right things, you know. And I think our technology has made us very powerful. And so it's not that the thing itself is bad, but what power tends to do, it tends to empower the natural trajectory of our human nature. And this is where the worldview perspective. There's a natural trajectory of our human nature that as Christians we acknowledge we need to overcome and we need to move in a different direction. Now, the problem isn't that technology itself is bad, but that it empowers this natural trajectory. It tends to enable the bad things and disable the good things. So I think maybe by way of sort of a beginning with this, maybe we can just speak to each one of these elements. And then, because today we want to talk about what opportunities we have actually to go.
Yeah, totally.
And so maybe we'll take one of these at a time and talk about how we can work together as the church. And we say that as the church because the church isn't an institution. It's not a service providing institution. That itself is a problem that's caused by aspects within our, and particularly within our technological culture, where we tend to objectify the institutions and, you know, the technology and the institutions have got to provide certain services to me, and the church can be viewed that way as well. We've got to understand that the theological notion of the church is fundamentally a group of people that have joined together in their connectedness, become, in a sense, the habitation of the Holy Spirit, so that together we become the body of Christ in the world. So we build each other up and we are a blessing to the world.
Yeah.
So
I think it's important, just while we're talking about that too, is when we talk about church and the church, as you say, we're not talking about the organization. We're talking about each one of us as individual members of that family. But we're also not just talking about what happens on Sunday either.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely.
We're, you know, when we say the church or at church or church, or we're not just saying
an event.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. An event. Yeah.
And which is a good bridge probably to the first thing, because one of the things, you know, that we see through history, and we see this in the biblical narrative with this tendency to fragmentation, where you see this from the pretty much the story of Cain and Abel onwards, you see this fragmentation of humanity. And then in the New Testament, of course, you see the ministry of the Spirit is going the opposite direction. So in Acts chapter 2, that they're speaking in different languages, but everyone can understand everyone. And so there's this sign of what the Spirit's going to do. It's the Spirit of God is going to unify us again. And we see that at the end of Acts with the picture of the Christian community as being this, you know, this unified community. And so one of the things that technology that we've covered can do is that it can tend to work to individualize us. It can empower that trajectory for independence and autonomy. So it tends to isolate people and disconnect people. It often mediates communication. And that is then exacerbated by the fact that we can create personas rather than persons. That exacerbates the disconnection, because we create personas and we relate to each other through those personas. And so we're more and more disconnected in terms of our real, as real persons. And then, of course, we're then finding it easier to interact, as you say, with the technology rather than with actual real people. Yeah. So here is, I think, the first opportunity that we have. I think, you know, Christian community is about togetherness and creating spaces for togetherness. And so I guess the first thing is to reflect on how we can do that in a way that really counteracts. It's not just a bunch of people getting together. I mean, it starts, I think, with real
common cause, collective.
Yeah, yep. I think it starts with, I mean, having said that the gathering on a Sunday, that's not all that church is.
Yeah.
However, gathering is a good start.
Yes,
you know
totally.
What I mean? gathering with real people as opposed to just watching YouTube
clips
online. Because there are people, you know, I mean, I've had people say to me, I just don't know what the point is. Like, you know, I can watch a way better sermon on YouTube than I can get at church. Mm. I can listen to way better music than I get at church. Mm. You know, so why would I go to church? That's, you know, and the whole point is, and I think what, you know, the probably the illustration that is appropriate here is the illustration of a gymnasium. You know, imagine we're athletes training for an event. We go to the gymnasium. Now, I mean, the invention of the gymnasium itself is an interesting, and we're using this as a metaphor, but it's an apt metaphor in that gymnasiums are in the sense that we have them today, are a relatively recent phenomena. I mean, people in the 1700s, 1800s, for example, would have thought it was the weirdest thing that you're going to expend all of this energy and lift weights. What are you creating? It doesn't create anything. But because of, again, our technological society, it's created so much ease for us that, you know, we drive everywhere. And so suddenly, and we sit down to do our work. And so we're very inactive. And so we have to, there are certain muscles that have been, you know, atrophied and inactivated, and that we need to go to gyms now to reactivate and rebuild those muscles. So essentially, I think the opportunity here, in a spiritual sense, in terms of our fundamental humanity, technology has actually atrophied certain capacities. It's reduced certain capacities to relate truly to a diverse array of people. That's an important part of this.
Totally.
That's something that's been atrophied. And so we need to think of church as a space where we come and we exercise certain capacities and regain certain abilities. And I'm not just talking about skills. I'm talking about things that pertain to a fundamental humanity, that we regain those. And then so that we can also not only regain those, but in a sense, take that into our various contexts.
Yeah. Totally. So when you use the term church there, again, we're talking about the church service when we gather together as church, but we are always the church, Sunday through to Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
it's not just on the Sunday. So again, I think it's really important through this conversation when we hear the word church that we realize that's something we're always, it's a bit like my family. I'm not only part of my family when I'm with my family, I'm part of my family all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think too, like with the Sunday service, if you view it as an entry point, it's kind of like the first step in, like it's an easy, and I think the way we've designed our church services, you know, you get a lot of commentators out there that throw stones at churches for
making it too accessible, kind of thing.
Making it too, you know, you talk about seeker friendly and you talk about, you know, not preaching sin and repentance all the time and so on, as if, I think the problem with that is if we view then that Sunday is the be all and end all, as if we've got to achieve the whole mission of God through a Sunday service. And really that's not, it's a gathering together.
To spur each other on, really.
To spur each other on.
To the real mission.
And to give that sense that you actually belong to something much bigger
than you.
Than you. So I guess it's an anchoring point, but it's just the starting point from what then happens after that. And there are other ways that we sort of gather and meet through the week, but they're probably less accessible because the church service is a public
demonstration.
You know, it's a public, demonstrate and invitation. So anybody can come. So it's so important as a gateway to sort
and we do talk about, of course, we talk about sin and repentance, we do that in ways that are intelligible. And so it's, you know, it's that connection and the physical togetherness is something. I mean, it's interesting in a way, even in the first century when the church, you know, when the church sort of started off, even at that time, gathering in groups of people was frowned upon, unless it was under the auspices of the state, because it was seen as potentially sort of dangerous, you know, because it was recognized that people getting together can be a very empowering thing. It creates a sort of synergy of passion amongst a people because, and this is the point, it activates a sense of connectedness, right? Because people naturally need to find a purpose that's bigger than themselves. And so, and we naturally need that. And getting together in a community of people that is devoted and that reminds us of that bigger cause draws us out of our individualism. And it's a very powerful thing because it activates something within us. It activates this sense that we're part of something bigger than just me. Now, that is so fundamental to our humanity. As a human being, my humanness is connected with humanity and with the purpose of humanity, right? And so me isolating myself is always going to diminish a very key part of my humanity. And it's not enough just to get together with, say, participate in a football club or a political demonstration. When I get together with a group of people that is fundamentally about reconnecting with our human purpose, right? That's the unique thing about the church, because we are gathering for that purpose. And in fact, that is the church. It is the gathering. I mean, ecclesia, the word original word ecclesia meant the called out ones, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's been called out from our individual lives and gathering in the collective to remind ourselves we're part of this is what we exist for. And there's something about doing that when we're all physically together that also not only reminds us of that intellectually, but activates that.
Yeah.
You know, there's an activation of that in the corporate. This is why people that come into church that living their lives and they've lost all sense of purpose and they come together with a group of people that are so focused on this purpose and they feel things coming alive within them. I mean, this is the feedback that we have from people coming to church for the first time, because they suddenly feel things that have been lacking in their life because it's this, oh, wow, there's this sense of focus here and this sense of purpose and then therefore this sense of joy, right?
Mm.
You know, they're reminded of it. And that's why that point of access is so important.
Mm. You know, one of the things thinking about too with individualism is as we come into a church environment, we are individualistic. We're building our own kind of empire, you know.
Our little kingdoms, yeah.
Our own little kingdoms. So the mission that I have is me, my mission, which is to build the wealth, which enables the lifestyle and allows me to access all of the great things that I think this world has to, and there's many great things, mm-hmm. you know, it's not putting that down, but it's necessary to build my little kingdom in order to create those opportunities for myself to experience the life that I want to lead. And we're all conditioned into that. And I think when we then come into church, we don't just stop that. You know, we come in with a very individualistic mindset still. Mm. And I think even when we come into church, there's a big sense as an individual, I want to get something out of church that feeds into also building my kingdom, you know. So there's something about community that I love, you know. There's something about even pursuing God can be an individualistic pursuit because it's as if God is a sort of an antidote to the problems that I'm feeling, you know, like it, that, you know, where disconnection and lack of purpose and so on. And maybe I see God as a way to fix up the problems in, you know, health and what's not working out for me in my life. So it's almost like church for me as an individual can become like a tool that I can access to continue to build my own little kingdom. And so individualism, it's not like that's outside the church. I think it's inside the
and
church
so
as
well. It takes a while of engaging in a certain sort of active self-giving sense in order to change that, you know, and this is where it's not just the one-off, it's the pattern of life, that church life is about creating new patterns in order to rewire us in a way that connects us with our original purpose, which makes us see ourselves as part of something bigger.
Mm.
So instead of, so it's a gradual move from me building my kingdom to us building the kingdom.
And that's a hard mind shift because it's inside of me. I can look inside myself, and whilst I kind of think, you know, reasonably active in, you know, our church, I see resistance within me because it comes into conflict with my kingdom that I want to build.
Which is exactly why we need to work hard to counter that.
Yeah.
And I think this is the purpose of what we're talking about today, is to recognize there are things that we need to counter. Because I do think there are movements within the broad church movement that I think succeed because they feed the individualism, because it's about, you know, here are the keys to you being happy and you being prosperous and you being healthy and you being, and I think that just feeds the problem.
Yeah.
And I know people keep coming back for that, right?
Yeah.
But there's actually something that we need to create that creates an element of resistance to that, actually. Yeah. And we embrace that in the same way. I don't, when I go to a gym and lift a weight, I don't say, oh, yuck, this is heavy. Mm. You know, I'm sweating now, so I'm never going to come back to this gym again. No, the whole idea of what we're trying to do as a church is to exercise our purpose muscle, so to speak, I guess, activate our communal capacities. Again, you know, and as a result, we become more fully human in that sense.
Well, moving away from individualism is then moving more to a community mindset, like living to lift up others, you know, at personal.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, that happens because the primary thing actually that we're oriented towards is that when we come together, it's primarily an act of worship. We're orienting ourselves towards God. And by connecting with God, we are continually, as a rhythm of life, we're reminded, oh, hang on, God has a purpose for our lives, and that's what we exist for. It's amazing how often we need to be reminded of that. I am not the God of my life, and therefore, I don't exist for my individualistic purposes. I exist for God's purpose, And actually, after a little while, that I will become a we.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that individualistic thing that you were talking about, Connell, in your own, I think let's remember that is the seed of the predicament of humankind, is that we want our life on our terms. We want to be God of our own lives. And so that is what we're always all dealing with, is the sense of I've got to look after me, as opposed to serving God's purpose, which is for the common good of mankind.
That's right. Yeah. And this is where, look, I think we should recognize the difficulty here. I mean, if I have completely atrophied muscles and I go to a gym, I'm gonna put a couple of kilos on that dumbbell and I'm gonna be exhausted after five raises or five reps or whatever. And I remember, man, going for a run when I first got into running, I remember running like 1 kilometer and I was absolutely exhausted and every muscle was aching. And I really didn't want to do it, right? I actually love running, right? And when I don't, it's, you know, but it took a while to get to that point. And I think a lot of people don't get past, they're so addicted to convenience. And this is one of the things that technology does for us, is it creates a culture of convenience. And we're so addicted to convenience and being served by our technology that we tend to see church as something that I come to as a service provider.
Yeah.
And if I'm not inspired, if I'm not made happier, if I'm not given the keys to being more successful in my individual life,
church is no good.
Then it's no good.
Yeah.
It didn't do anything. I mean, this is the things that people say. Oh yeah, it didn't really do anything for me, or I didn't get much out of it today, or which is so contrary to what church if we understand it as a gym. I mean, you don't stand in a gym and look at everyone else and thinking, oh, this isn't very inspired. I didn't get much out of this today. You don't get much out of it until you, I know this is a cliche, but unless you put something in. The putting in that actually activates the muscles that are then going to grow, right? Yeah. And it takes a while of doing that before they do grow. And it actually becomes something that becomes immensely enjoyable.
Mm. You know, what one of the things, and this is really powerful, I think, with the whole gym analogy being like the church, just thinking about it. Because if you think, you know, when you're dealing with health struggles or, you know, you're lacking fitness or whatever, and you realize that you need to do something about it. And so the remedy is you get told, well, you need to get on a fitness program. And so all of a sudden, well, you know, you're going to have to get up early, 5:30 in the morning. Go down and do an hour and a half in the gym, and you're not used to doing that. The resistance of getting up out of bed at that time to go and do that is going to be huge. So there's almost like a retraining of mindset. And so you've then got to actually learn some new behaviors where you actually push against your inner sort of inertia to make those kind of changes. So you actually got to go and do it. And then as you do it, you get into a pattern. And then you do all these exercises that just make you feel just horrible. They go, oh, I hate every minute of it, you know, as you're kind of working through it. But somehow you've got to come back again tomorrow and the day after and the day after. And that is in itself, it's a retraining. I'm looking at it in myself because I go to the gym a fair bit. It was a recent thing that I started a few years ago. But that transition into that was difficult. And I see it in other people too, who are dealing with all sorts of other things in their life. But it's a mindset change where, you know, we're kind of used to just doing whatever we want. You know, we're sort of kind of lazy in terms of our ability to push back on just doing whatever we want now in the short term and retraining that discipline and behaviors. It takes a while to do it. And you just got to get in there and do it. And keep doing it over and over again. And then it becomes a new kind of lifestyle, you know, a new way of thinking.
And I think the analogy here, I would suggest, works also because sustainability is a big thing here as well. And I know with exercise, if you're going to add something don't bite off more, like you've got to accustom yourself to a new rhythm. So, you know, I mean, for someone that, you know, sort of rocks up to church when they feel like it, the first step is be more disciplined, right? Be more disciplined about making this a rhythm of your life. And then get involved in something. Now, don't start with like 5 hours a week, right? Just get involved in something of like a bite size, you know, it's all about, it's all about the bite size stuff. It's, you know, if you're wanting to, if you're wanting to think less selfishly, you know, in your workplace and really represent Christ and Christ's purpose in the workplace, start with the little things, right?
It might just be doing the dishes in the lunchroom.
Yeah, exactly. Start with the little things, and by thinking differently, you know, in those, you can build from there. There's probably another level here, I think, because, you know, we've talked about the importance of just that initial thing of sort of gathering and thinking more of that space in terms of exercising, you know, certain capacities. And I think if we drop down to the next level, one of the problems we recognize was the problem of the way that our culture, and I mean, this is, look, you know, this goes way back, but again, we're talking about something that technology empowers here, is the creation of personas. Now, you know, I mean, goodness, people have been creating personas forever, you know, but technology now enables us to do this in new ways, right?
Yeah.
And we can tend to connect with each other so much on the basis of those personas. I think going to the next level, you know, it's one thing to gather with other people and to do that regularly and to be part of that sense of purpose and drawn into that sense of purpose. But the next level, I think, is that we need to work on connection. You know, we need to foster a community with each other whereby we're relatively vulnerable. We're willing to be vulnerable and we're dropping personas. To some extent, it's, you know, I mean, people tend to do that with trusted individuals. And that's certainly a beginning. You know, there needs to be someone that you connect with that you can really bear your true self to. But I think as a habit of life, we need to work on living and relating to other people in slightly more transparent ways.
Yeah.
Now, I think the church provides a wonderful opportunity for this. If we, as long as we understand that we are something like a recovery community, right? We exist. I often talk about the church as being like a hospital, you know, and in a hospital, you sort of, there are behaviors that are normal that are not, you know, so, you know, last time I was in hospital, I had, you know, I'm there in bed and I'm got scars and people are pulling back.
Yeah.
You know, the doctors are looking at my scars, and that becomes a normal thing in that, because it's understood that this is a hospital and, you know, we need to sort of embrace that. And the church is a recovery community in the same sense. It's, we are recovering our God-given humanity together. And so we need to be able to be honest about the fact that we all have wounds, that we're all broken in some sense, that we're all, I think this is a really important aspect of community, is having this understanding that we're all imperfect, we all have brokenness, and we're all on a process of recovery. So we're not wallowing together, but I think that takes us to a deeper place. Really, the one thing that we have in common, and yes, I mean, we're all children of God and everything, but experientially, the thing that we have in common is the fact that we all suffer from the same predicament, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like I see amazing unity in you know, drug and alcohol rehabilitation centers. I'm thinking of the one that, you know, churches connected with, and the community of guys in that rehabilitation center. There's a wonderful sense of community there because they all understand we all have these life controlling issues, and so they're just open about that. No one's you know, denying that. And
if you think about Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing you have to say, my name, and I'm an alcoholic. That's, you have to admit the problem.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Totally. And that creates a sense of community. I think, because I can't think of another place. I mean, there are groups like that focus on specific issues. But what the church is actually focusing on, the fundamental problem of sin, which is deeper than any moral issue or even deeper than addictions. It's the root problem right at the core, right? It's, we're all dealing with this you know, with this God complex, the core issue of our humanity. And that is the thing that binds us all together, right? Because that's the one thing that we all have in common. Yeah. So there might be a moral difference between you and me. You might be morally a way better moral achievements than I do, but that's almost so far secondary to what we share in terms of the fundamental brokenness of our humanity. That there's no other context where I share that with other people. That the church is all about connecting with our salvation at that core level and then participating in this journey of recovery together that we need each other for in that journey of recovery.
Yeah. But someone has to go first, Matt.
Exactly.
And that's the point, because trust is built when someone else makes themselves vulnerable. The other person feels they can be vulnerable. And so, in a sense, we've got to lead each other in that that way of being vulnerable. And as you say, right person, right place, right time, that's important too. But I think someone's got to go first.
Yeah, that's right. And the right person at the right place at the right time is the beginning.
Yes.
And I'm not saying we all share all of our stuff with everyone. But in a sense, we do need to create a sort of a culture in which we just recognize that. So, essentially, it's a culture of grace.
Yes.
We extend grace to one another, because I cannot judge you for a moral failure, because at the deeper level, deeper than morals, we share a deeper and much more serious spiritual brokenness.
Yeah. You know,
and that enables a sense of community.
Mm. I think that's how it should be, but we're not that.
Absolutely.
And it comes back to the fact people walk in the door. We're still coming with our, I'm on mission me, still trying to build my empire. I'm an individual. I come in with the facade that I've created for myself, and I come into that. So church is made up a community of people at all different stages. And I think, again, this is where the gymnasium analogy is good, because you don't go to a gym and walk out a new person. It's only by being in it, month after month after month, year after year, it's a journey. And so I think what we're doing within church then is learning how to let go of that facade.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, what can happen is that we exchange facades rather than, because essentially what church really should be doing is deconstructing the facade to get to the real broken person behind. But what can tend to happen when people become Christians is that they just then adopt a Christian facade, right? Mm. And that actually, it's interesting that in Jesus' time, he actually treated the religious facades as far more dangerous.
Yeah, he did.
Far more dangerous because it covers over the problem more. And, the Beatitudes, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the broken, brokenhearted, the poor in spirit. It's like they are the ones that are going to get it, right? Because the religious facade is going to be a far more impenetrable barrier, in a sense, to getting to that.
And I think also for spectators looking in, the common thing I hear from people is like, all these Christians think they're holier than thou, because that's exactly what we put on. We put on this facade, and then people come in and go, oh, I can't live up to that expectation kind of thing, or whatever it might be, because we're just not being real.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I think, and again, it's not that we just bleed over each other all the time, but that we operate in a way. And it's actually often about the small things. It's a mindset. It's being willing to have a certain level of transparency in the right sort of context. Mm. It's bit by bit. And then also when someone is transparent with me, or particularly when I hear about something that's happened in someone's life, some failure or whatever, that I in no ways judge that person. Like, there's a sense like, well, we're all, because, how we react and how we talk about other people, if we're talking about somewhere, being really judgmental together, that actually tells me, like, let's say we get together and we have a really judgmental conversation. How could that person possibly do that? Mm. Oh, they're such an evil person. Mm. And we're so shocked, right? And so we have a little judge fest. That actually means that I'm not going to share my brokenness with you or with you, right? Yeah. Because we've just sucked all the grace out of our own environment.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's going to encourage me then to live with that facade. So there are things that we cannot do and do actually to create an environment that encourages a level of transparency where we're not expecting people. I mean, no one says in a hospital, oh, that guy next door,
he's sick.
Can you believe he's sick? Mm. It's an absolute shock. Yeah, of course he's sick. This is a hospital.
Or even the gymnasium. He's only lifting 2 kilos. Can you believe he's only lifting 2 kilos? But he's starting there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think that's that's an important element of going deeper. I think the other thing, because the next thing that we acknowledged about technology is that it's created for convenience, and it tends to then also push us into a passive sort of mindset. And so active, learning to be active and actively engage. I mean, as a church, we get together and we seek God together. I mean, seeking God is an active, we serve each other, right? Because technology is all about being, so it's what can this device do for me? And so, Jesus famously says, I've come not to be served, but to serve, right? And so having that active engagement that I'm here for other people, right? Rather than me building my little empire, it gets us out of that
consumerist
mentality, which I think technology really, really creates almost a very impatient consumerist technology. If I don't get what I want, church is a space where we learn to actively engage and serve and give. And so it's actually a space where I pour out. So even in the corporate worship, it's actually not about what you bring. I mean, first of all, you being there serves the bigger thing, right? Mm. Because it's a public declaration and demonstration of praise to God, right?
Yeah.
And you just being in the room, you getting in your car and driving and being there, I think that one of the most powerful things is us using the resources that we use to create our individualistic lives. I think the sacrifice of tithing, of giving that first 10% into the communal to share that in the context of community, I think that's a powerful mechanism that works against our individualism, because where your money goes, that's where your heart goes, right?
Yeah.
For me personally, it's the giving of that 10% that it's a heavy weight. That's probably one of the heaviest weights that my faith lifts, because it's the thing that I would most want to hold on to. And by giving that, it just rewires. It rewires
me.
And then it's coming to this space, and it's, okay, who needs me rather than what do I need to get from this space? And it's connected. And then you go the next level, because people create church. Without everyone involved, there is no church.
Yeah, that's right.
A church run by a small group of professionals actually isn't a church. Yeah. Church fundamentally is a body, to use the biblical example, and all the elements of the body are serving. And so it's the active me doing my part in the church, everyone doing their small parts. Like to use the illustration of tithing, the way that I often put it is that we bring the first portion and we give it to the community. And it's not our mission, of course, is in our workplaces and out in the world, but the idea is that everyone brings something to the corporate, right? Mm. And we learn by the giving and serving the corporate. We actually train the muscles that we're then going to exercise out in our workplaces. So hopefully when you learn to serve with that giving of that first portion of your effort and your skills and your, into church life, not only does it say, first and foremost, I'm part of something bigger than just me, we can then take that to our workplaces, because you recognize, I actually represent the church in this space as a Christian. Mm. And then we can, we'll be more likely to think of other people and how we're serving in that context.
Yeah. So the convenience thing, I think, is a really a good point, that technology has made us want to take the path of least resistance, what's the most convenient thing. But I think also we should recognize that being an active part of a church community is going to cost you something and should cost you something, not just financially, but it's going to cost inconvenience. It's going to require you to step out and go and meet that person for a coffee during the week that you don't really get on with all that well, but you feel God saying, or the Holy Spirit saying, yeah, I need you to go have a conversation with that person, and being obedient to that. If it's not costing you anything, then you're probably not giving much.
Yeah, that's I think of you know David saying at one point when he wanted to buy a field to set up an altar to offer an offering to God, and the person was going to give it to him for free. You know, this is at the end of 1 Samuel, and he says, "I will not sacrifice to the Lord what costs me nothing. It has to cost me something.
Yeah, that's
otherwise,
great.
It's not a sacrifice of worship. Totally. Oh, well, it's not a sacrifice.
No, that's
essentially.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, so worship, you know, needs to be a sacrifice. It's an act of self-giving, and this is the capacity, right? It's this sort of outward flow rather than me as a consumer, a sort of black hole that draws everything into itself.
Yeah. And if I stop
it's
getting
flipping
on
that to go the other way,
yeah, totally.
It's a flow out, right?
Mm.
That's the thing that we need to be exercising.
I think that, and that's active and passive thing I think is important, because I think we can feel like we're active, but we're actually just being passive. And so what I mean by that is part of developing the muscle is, and if we look at say developing muscles in a gym, if you were lifting 5 kilos a month ago and you're still lifting 5 kilos, it's a lot easier now than what it was a month ago. We're actually supposed to be lifting 50 kilos, right?
Mm.
But we're still doing 5 because it's got easy. So it's actually not really costing us much. We can go to the gym, we can do it. I've ticked the box. I feel good about myself. I've worked out and it hasn't really cost me anything, not like it did when I was starting out. And so there's a resistance to then sort of push harder. So I think where I'm going with this is it's easy even in a self-centered way to serve other people because it makes me feel good, you know. So there's certain people I can reach out to someone and I feel good. I've reached out to them. I've done my bit. I've ticked the box. It's made me feel better about myself. And so I've actually, in serving someone else, got something for myself. And some ways I think we can often substitute that as if that's our service, you know, that is the serving that we're doing. But I think
which is fine in a sense, though,
it is.
But doing the right thing, it should actually
give us joy.
What I'm saying is,
and give us joy.
That's not the place to stop, because I think the muscle we want to exercise is being able to serve others when we feel the resistance of, oh, I don't have time to do this, or I don't like that person much, or they're difficult to get on with.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it for me to serve that other person.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that's
really
hard.
Or we don't
really
treat it like an achievement as well. People aren't achievements.
They aren't
like
our projects.
They're not projects. The self-giving and the relating to another person is an act of acknowledgement of their value as a human being. And that has value in itself.
So I think that's a muscle we've got to redo, because it doesn't – outside the church, people are serving each other and looking after each other as well.
Yeah.
But I think inside – the church, it needs to really, if we're working on that as a community and exercising those muscles, there should be a sense of resistance within us. And as the church is like a big gym for practicing and working that out, we should get better and better. Instead of lifting 5 kilos, we're now lifting 10 kilos. You know, we're actually learning to take more of that weight on our shoulders of being responsible for the mission.
Yeah.
And purpose of the church. So I guess the point that I'm saying there is being active is always being active to push against that resistance that comes to us, which is our time and resources and money.
So instead of saying as soon as it's going to cost me something, oh, no, that's as much as I'm willing to do, is actually pushing through that.
Pushing through that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And just in case anyone's feeling like, oh, you know, telling me I've got to do all of this stuff. No. I mean, the beauty here is that, you know, the nature of the Christian life is that we're all a part. We're all a small part of something. Right?
Yeah.
So church becomes problematic when you've got a small core of people that are doing everything. That's what we want to try and avoid. It's everyone doing their part and increasing that capacity. It should be an energizing thing that as I do my part, over time it develops me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I become a certain sort of person. And it's not just by I'm going to serve in this ministry for 2 months and It's like going to the gym for 2 months. It's like, well, I still, you know, I still can't lift more than, you know, a few kilos. Yeah. Well, no, but it's about adopting a lifestyle. It's about a new lifestyle. It's a lifestyle in which I give the first portion of my gifts and my efforts and my resources. This is so fundamentally biblical. I give the first portions to, you know, to God and God's corporate purpose, right? Mm. And that sort of orients my life. I mean, it's interesting. I've been looking at the story of Cain and Abel. It's like the first thing outside the garden, the first issue is the difference between Cain and Abel, where Abel gave the first portion, right? Mm-hmm. The first portion.
Yeah.
Whereas it says of Cain that he just gave some of versus first portion, mm-hmm. right? And it's like right at the start of the Bible, you know, it's making this statement about the fact the most important thing is us orienting ourselves by giving the first of something, right? And then that affects the rest of our lives. Jesus is asking for our all. He's not just wanting part of us. That's very important, right? He's asking for our all. And he wants us to serve him in everything. So in whatever our occupation is, our preoccupation is with who Jesus wants us to be in that circumstance. But to orient ourselves toward that, he asks us, give the first portion of your gifts and efforts and resources into the corporate.
Mm-hmm. So not your spare time.
Yeah, that's right. Not just your spare time, not just your spare change, but the first portion. Bring it to the altar, share it with the community of God's people to build up the community, right? And then that reorients us all in a way that's going to enable us to be far greater blessing in the rest of our lives.
And so again, that muscle, it's a constant thing that we keep developing. So we should be big, and it shouldn't be, I don't think it's meant to be a burden, but it might feel like, because we're actually fighting against an inner thing within us, which is part of the human predicament that we've talked about. You know, it's that we want to build our empire, my empire. And so you're always going to have to fight against that. You should feel the fight, I think, all of the time.
Yeah.
And that's why you're always giving the first, you know, giving your best, you know, because the model works when we use to exercising the muscle that allows us to push against that and reorientate ourselves away from the mission of me building my life and my empire to the mission of God and the church. And I think that's where we've got to look at what mission are we actually running for our life. Because if you look at the big picture there, what's actually happening is we're shifting the mission that we've been running from that individual mission. The mission was like Project Me to changing it to the mission, which is the mission that God has given us. Yeah. And that is going to mean the mission that I had before, which is building my empire, is going to suffer. It's going to take a hit. That's the point.
That's the point, exactly. That's it. That's right. So in summary, just to summarize where we are, and I think we'll finish off soon, is essentially what church is designed to create in a world that is characterized by increasing fragmentation, because it's lots of people building their individual kingdoms, and that can happen in groups as well, you know.
And we can live in our own silos of our
own. Exactly.
Social media platforms or whatever it might be that we're living in.
Yep. And it's the opportunity actually to reconnect around building the kingdom, right? So there's an opportunity here to connect with real people that are recovering their humanity at a deeper level. And so it's the connection with a group of people who are all facing, you know, the depths of the human predicament and are on this wonderful journey, right? This wonderful journey of growth and recovery, emerging out of that and becoming the people we're meant to be. So it's a connection in the church, that real human connection, not connecting as personas, but as persons. And the connection is enabled by us being giving oriented. So we're there to give and to serve. And so it's about how I support you in your journey. And actually, fundamentally, by me being more transparent, and we encourage each other by sharing, right? It's the sharing that it encouraged. So I share my journey and my discoveries and my learning. I share it with you, right? And then I also share my gifts, and even I share my resources so that this thing can be enabled. That whole sense of connection and giving and active engagement in that, I think, is so important. And now then I think finally,
can I just say that too, the serving, it's not just how can I serve other people, but it's what you touched on there. How do I become more vulnerable myself? In other words, how do I take the facade down? How much am I willing to take the mask off or to allow myself to be exposed for who I really am, with all my sort of weaknesses and things that I'm afraid that people might judge me for, and my own failings? That's not even in the sense of going to serve someone, but it's letting go of another thing that I've built up in my life that I think is really important, that learning how to flex that muscle, to let go of that facade, that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time. And energy.
And we need to encourage each other with that, therefore. Absolutely.
So this is where the church can be the light in the darkness, for want of a better phrase, you know, where we can actually be presenting, in a sense, a remedy to where it seems society is heading, incredibly accelerated by the way technology is enabling us to be more self-centered and more individualistic.
You know, I think in a culture that is oriented towards me empowering my dreams and my, you know, my little kingdom, and then keeping me entertained in the process, because one of the problems with just me focusing on me all the time is that my life becomes devoid of the one thing that I'm actually made for, which is that big purpose, right? That, you know, and that creates this sickening emptiness in our lives that then we have to then entertain. And so, like any drug, we then become addicted to the drug that compensates for the emptiness, right? So our culture is oriented so much towards constant entertainment. And so we need to sort of work backwards, right? We need to create space in the midst of all the entertainment to move into a space that's not about me being entertained, but rather a space that I step into that's about me being on a journey bit by bit to reverse, you know, those elements, to exercise pulling down the facade and connecting with people really, and really caring about other people, and you know, self-giving. And there's a wonderful opportunity for us here to exercise that in a way that is actually going to get us in touch with who we really are. So this is, in one sense, you know, it's like when you exercise muscles, that's what muscles are for, right? We're not doing something that goes against us. It's why ultimately exercise does actually make you feel good, because it makes you a better person, right? It's like what muscles are for, right? And I think in the recovering of our humanity and the right spiritual orientation towards God and each other, we activate our humanity. We become better human beings, and it does actually feel better. I mean, it's more peaceful. It's because I'm less reliant on other things, because I am generally more fulfilled as a human being, and I find fulfillment in this process. And if I can stick with it enough, and this is where the analogy with exercise helps, you've got to stick with it enough. So it gets to the point where you actually realize, oh no, I want to go for a walk. I want to go for a run. I want to, you know, want to do these things. And so as we train together with this and we encourage one another, we'll find that actually this is something becomes immensely enjoyable. And then when people see that, you know, I only got into running because a neighbor just talked about how amazing it is, and he loves, and the way that he painted the picture to me, I just thought, oh man, I need to get fit, you know, like, and he said, well, you need to stick with it. I think we want to say the same thing to our world. We want to say there's a better way of being human. It's a way of being human where we reconnect with God, and we begin this process of reconnecting with each other, and we recover our humanity, and together we become the people that we were always made to be. A community that does that is going to be a light in this world.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Thrive Perspectives. Our hope is that these discussions will challenge you to look at life from a new perspective. You'll find all our resources at the Thrive Today website, thrivetoday.tv. If there's a topic that you'd like us to discuss, please email us. Our email is contact@thrivetoday.tv. Until next time, our prayer is that you will thrive.